This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, May 6, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. It's harder than you might think to draw big distinctions between the trade policies of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And that's decidedly not good news for free and open exchange with our fellows around the world. Cato's Scott Linscombe handicaps the trade policies of the two leading candidates for president. Scott, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but I certainly do. President Obama making his pretty weak, calculated defense of trade as, yeah, we kind of sort of got to do it. And it was not a look at what greatness trade unleashes for humanity on the planet. Certainly not what it does for Americans who are, you know, so productive in creating products for the world, designing products for the world. Donald Trump, just a few years later, was threatening companies for moving production to Mexico, thought NAFTA was terrible, and then signed into law a deal that was most of NAFTA, I suppose, with some pointed changes. And Joe Biden, tell me if I'm wrong, seems relatively silent on the trade issue, but largely hasn't done anything to counter any of the policies of the Trump administration. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. The Biden administration in rhetoric is pretty much a polite version of Donald Trump, which in fact, Jim Baucus, one of our adjunct scholars at Cato, wrote exactly that the Biden administration is the era of polite protectionism, he called it, maintaining most of Trump's policies, but also refusing to engage in any sort of trade agreements, continuing the United States blockade on the World Trade Organization's dispute settlement body. So really being, I would call it Trump light on rhetoric, but basically the same stuff that we got after 2016. But first of all, I should note, Caleb, I really appreciate you thinking that I'm so young as to not remember the Obama administration. That's really a testament to my skincare regime. So I appreciate that. But more seriously, look, you know, when I was coming up, when I was an intern at Cato in the 1990s, and then throughout the 2000s, presidents were reluctant free traders. There was no Milton Friedman in the group. But in general, you saw presidents supporting trade agreements and more open trade, mainly on mercantilist grounds. Exports good, imports bad, but to export, we got to import. So we're going to agree to these trade agreements that liberalize both, you know, our markets and markets abroad. So that was not bad. And then, like you said, there was a pretty big sea change when Donald Trump came in. There was an outright hostility to imports, to foreign competition, to foreigners, foreign acquisitions, you name it, and a really abandonment of the what I would call the neoliberal trade consensus that kind of governed since really the Reagan days. And Biden has essentially continued that.
As we are in the heat of the 2024 election season, we have, we assume, two candidates for president who, on policy grounds, aren't that far apart. We have at least one major trade agreement that, as you noted before we started recording, must be reviewed and either reinstituted or altered every 5 years.
Yeah.
So the USMCA, which replaced NAFTA, what have they said about this? These are two of our biggest trading partners on the planet. They're our neighbors. It's easy to trade with these countries. What have they said about this agreement?
Right. So the, as usual with almost everything U.S. trade policies these days, it comes back to China. I mean, first we should note that for all the Sturm und Drang about NAFTA, the reality is that Trump's USMCA was effectively a carbon copy with some changes on the margins and trade in goods and some actually quite good things on digital trade, more liberal rules on digital trade, which the United States is a leader in that area because it's basically professional services, which we do a lot of, and software and all that kind of jazz, which we have comparative advantages in. But in the USMCA, you have a term that requires a review. And the big issue that both Trump and Biden have raised is that cars made in Mexico, quote unquote, will be entering the United States containing tons of Chinese content. The cars might be made at facilities in Mexico owned by the Chinese. And this, they simply cannot have. And so you're hearing rumblings, mainly from Trump, about canceling the agreement outright, but certainly from the Biden administration as well, about examining automotive exports from Mexico to the United States for potential Chinese content. And you're hearing rumblings in Congress about examining any imports from Mexico to see how much Chinese content they have. Now, that's a pretty radical intervention in that bilateral trade. I mean, you know, supply chains are complex. Products are complex. You know, these are not 1950s toasters we're talking about for the most part. So to actually figure out the exact amount of Chinese content and to apply tariffs based on that, it would require a pretty radical departure from the free trade agreement. So that's, I think, a good area where they're quite similar. And then, you know, I think on China in general, the rhetoric is very protectionist, very nationalist. You know, there's a little bit of differences. Trump is, as usual, more bellicose, threatening to raise all the tariffs. Biden, the moderate, is only going to raise some tariffs, right? So, you know, big win. But nobody is actually speaking of trade and globalization in a really positive light.
Talking about Biden, what were the trade implications, some of the things that he's signed into law and advocated for, right, when it comes to things that have been couched or presented as environmental benefit to the United States?
Yeah, and this is actually an area where I think that, you know, we say Biden continued a lot of Trump's protectionism, but in some ways amplified it because of all this industrial policy that Congress has handed the president, that the president has also championed in the form of the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act, even some of the infrastructure bill as well, the infrastructure law. And the protectionism baked into this is not merely the trillions of dollars in subsidies. Subsidies are protectionist in a different way, but it's actually what we call local content rules that essentially say to qualify for a subsidy, you have to use American-made materials or, you know, we need American-made charging stations. You get bonuses if you're transmitting green energy via American-made transmission lines, all that kind of stuff. So these Buy America rules, these localization mandates are an blatant form of protectionism. And given the scope of the subsidies that we've implemented, not just for semiconductors, but for electric vehicles, which, by the way, is another reason why Biden's so concerned about Chinese electric vehicles, because his subsidies are on the line too. But all of that protectionism is baked into those subsidies. And given the size of the subsidies, Adam Michel, my colleague at Cato in the tax specialty area, we looked at this a little while ago and it looked like maybe $2 trillion for the IRA alone. Now maybe it's even $3 trillion. And so when you have subsidies of this magnitude and you have these protectionist mandates baked in, that's a lot of new protectionism that the Biden administration has overseen and, quite frankly, championed.
On trade, it just seems some of the big differences are just the degree to which they're willing to be loud about their protectionism.
Yeah, I think that's basically right, except the really one area where Trump is truly distinguishing himself is on this 10% tariff idea, this ring around the country, he calls it, where Trump has proposed and just the other day doubled down on the idea that he wants a 10% tariff on every import. So not just imports from China, not just from Mexico, but imports from Canada and Japan and the European Union, you name it, imports from free trade agreement partners, whatever, all of them would be subject to a 10% tariff. That is a pretty radical change, not just in U.S. trade policy, but a pretty big departure from the Biden administration, which has attacked Trump on this because of how it would raise prices. You know, one calculation looked at, you know, maybe $1,300 a year the average family would spend because of these new tariffs. So, you know, Trump is out there on that. But, you know, at the end of the day, those of us who are in the weeds on this stuff are saying, well, of course, the Biden administration is supporting all sorts of other tariffs and hasn't removed the previous Trump tariffs and has all those local content rules. And so it's not exact a clean hit on Trump's tariff proposal, which, of course, is very bad. But unfortunately, there's a lot of hypocrisy there, too.
The tariffs from the Biden administration, which is to say the ones that have been kept and advanced by the Biden team versus a 10% tariff.
Right.
For example, a 10% tariff, which is a much cleaner way to intellectually at least get at the problems with
right.
trade protection. What would that mean for production in the U.S.? I guess in particular, production that depends on components, intermediate goods that come from outside the U.S.
Right. Yeah. You know, and this is a classic problem, you know, you and I have talked about previously, and that is that in Washington, people talk about trade like it's the 1940s, where, you know, a good is made in one place and then shipped and sold to consumers in another place. But that's just not how modern supply chains work. Stuff is made everywhere. About half of everything we import in the United States is stuff used by manufacturers, so capital goods and equipment and raw materials that manufacturers use to make other stuff. So when you tax imports, you're effectively taxing American manufacturers. The other big thing is that typically you'll see currency changes, particularly for a tariff of this magnitude and this scope. And you'll see the dollar will strengthen. If the dollar strengthens, well, that's actually okay for consumers. It increases American purchasing power, but it's going to be bad for exporters because their products suddenly become more expensive overseas because of the currency conversion. So there's no way that this tariff is going to actually benefit most of American manufacturing. You know, if you make hunks of steel or basic commodities, you might get some benefit unless you're an exporter. And then again, you're going to get toasted on the currency side.
And if you're involved in high-tech production, where you have parts coming from many different places around the world,
yeah.
that 10% gets added to each of those components, and you suddenly find yourself trying to sell a product that cost far more to make than it needed to.
Yeah, and you know, you think of a product like semiconductors, right? All of Washington is adamant that we need more semiconductor production onshore, and thus we have all these subsidies to build semiconductor facilities, what they call fabs. You know, first, those semiconductor facilities themselves require tons of steel and concrete and other materials that suddenly we're now going to make more expensive with tariffs. I mean, we're already doing it with the Trump-era steel and aluminum tariffs that Biden kept. But also, those semiconductors, the simple manufacturing of those chips requires all sorts of equipment and chemicals and other things. And we're going to put tariffs on all that too. So you're effectively kneecapping manufacturers, including manufacturers that you say are essential to national security and all these other things that have suddenly become globally uncompetitive because you're taxing everything they need to make their products.
Scott Linsicum is Vice President for General Economics at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you like. And thank you for listening.